Mrs. Stevens' real fault. Now, any other entertainment visits organised for you and your girls? You mentioned King Farouk's yacht. Anything else?
Well, the men were very keen to have female companionship. But it was very hard only being a few girls with all these thousands of men. So you had to be very, very careful. He used to talk to them and tell them what some of them had been abroad quite a while. Tell them what was going on at home after you've left, you know. It was an unreal time.
Now, you met your husband.
Yes.
Out there. Yes. Tell us how
he
that happened.
He was in charge. We were at Fade, wasn't it, when I met you? Wait a minute now. Let me see. Joe was, he used to come into the canteen, and I got to know him because he was in charge of very important vehicles for use of. And if you wanted to go into Ismailia, you used to ask Sergeant Joe. I never even knew his name till I got home to England, but to me he was just Sergeant Joe. And he used to give us a lift in a jeep. I'm going to Ismailia. Can I have a lift? Because we were miles from anywhere. Miles from anywhere. Couldn't walk it, and it wasn't safe. Wasn't safe even in a... The natives used to stop you sometimes at night to steal things from you. Because They were very childish, the Arabs. The low-class Arabs were very, very childish. But frightening too, they could be.
So how did you get on with your husband-to-be? Was it a whirlwind romance?
Met him on the beach. I met him on the beach, and he'd just come back from leave in England. And he was very good to me. My brother was coming through the Suez Canal. It was just after that bomb had been dropped. Not long after, because when my brother came back through the Suez Canal... And that was the time when Joe took me to see him again. I wanted to take my dog home. And that was the only way I could get my dog transported to England, was on my brother's ship. So I asked the captain. And he said, if you take this parrot, I'll take your dog. And I never forgot that. My brother took me in to see the captain, and all the officers were sitting round. And as it was nearly 100... They were only had towels round them, and they were drinking. And I said to the captain, don't get up! I was highly embarrassed. All those men sitting around with just towels on, as if they were in a Turkish bath.
So what happened? Because this is how you got Mr.
Yes,
Stevens.
That's right. Demoted. So I took the parrot, and they took, my brother took the dog for me, and went home. He came through. He came from Suez, you see. He'd been to Japan. Don't know why. Why he'd been to Japan? He was in the Merchant Navy. And I saw him going out, and then I went to him coming back, and he took my dog.
Now, how we've heard from Mr. Stevens. How do you reckon you got him demoted then?
Oh, the thing was. First, my brother was at Suez, and I decided to go and see him at Suez. When we got to Suez, the ship was too far out for the agent to go. The water was too rough and choppy to go out in an ordinary boat. So the agent said to me, we don't advise going out. We're not going out to the ship with the mail. He said, we'll have to send it. So they went the next day. They were going down this canal. Now, how could I resist? I wanted to see my brother's ship going along the canal because it's only 90 miles wide, 90 feet, yards wide. And I wanted to, I would have been quite close, and it would have been quite thrilling to see this boat going down the canal. So I said to Joe, please, go on the canal road. Not the treaty road. That was the treaty road and the canal road. And as we got into Portishead, this red staff officer, bed cap, stopped him. And said, what are you doing on this road? You know, it's forbidden. It's only for staff cars and what else? What was it? Some... just for the high-ups. But the ordinary lorries had to go on the treaty road. And he got into... he lost his rank. I was very sorry. But I think he survived. He was still doing his job anyway.
Now you were getting quite close to coming back. Well, you came back. Tell me anything else during the peacetime period before you came back in 1947.
Civilians started coming out to take over our jobs.
Tell me about that then.
And one of them came out, and she came and to my canteen, Eva, and she was watching everything I did so she could take over because we were programmed for going home.
So you didn't have to be army to serve in a
not
canteen.
When the war was finished. The war was over. There's a difference. We understood that. You mustn't go abroad without a uniform. Very dangerous in wartime. The army looks after its own, you see, but they don't know what to do with civilians.
So, anything happened, or was it just routine for the last year or so, year and a half?
Several things happened. It was very dangerous. I remember inside the Moasca garrison, I was followed by a tribe of Arabs. We'd had a girl murdered there, and I was foolish enough to go without my bearer. We had bearers. We had a big man called Sally. Oh, he was about 6.5 foot, and he was very proud to march along with his stick, his staff, and guard me.
What else would the bearer do for you? We'll go on to the attack.
He'd sleep on the gates at night. Sleep. He was supposed to be awake, but most of them went to sleep. We always had a man on the gates.
So he was a guard more than
that's
a servant.
That's right. Yes. We were very fond of them, because especially Sally. We got to know them, you know, and they were just like children.
And he was your guard, or was he the girl's guard?
The girl's guard.
And you'd gone out. What happened this night when you went out? What was the danger?
Well... he didn't come, he was late, so I went off without him. And I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, I hear the pad of feet. And then I hear a heavier pad of feet, as if somebody else had joined on. And when I looked round, there's six of them coming along, and they're about 100 yards away, and I thought, oh my God. And it flashed into my mind about this girl being murdered in this very road.
Inside
the Moasca garrison. And all of a sudden, a door opened. I heard men's voices, and a sergeant came out of a sergeant's mess. And I fell on his neck. I said, am I glad to see you? And of course, he told me off, which he was quite right. I shouldn't have been there. I should have waited. We are stupid when we are young. You think it can't happen to me.
Any other instance like that?
Yes. Another time I was followed in Ismailia, and I'll tell you about these aristocratic boys that used to work for me for pin money, as they called it. They used to treat the Arabs very badly, the ordinary Arabs, you know, the lower class. And one night, one of the boys insulted the relatives of one of the Arabs, and he pulled a knife on him in my kitchen, and I was furious, and I got the doctor, the MO, same MO that was, and he came in, and I'm talking to this French boy, and I'm telling him off, and I'm giving him real stick. And all of a sudden, my eyes fell on the wound. Well, I hadn't noticed the wound, you see. All I knew that was, you know, the doctors were seeing to it. And when I saw the wound, that was it. I nearly passed out. But
he'd actually stabbed him.
He actually stabbed him, yes. And the cook used to... He was 50, but he was an old man. He used to know everything. He said to me, Sawish, he said, do not let him go home. He says, he'll be waiting for him. So we had to get a taxi and send him all the way home safely, because this boy would have waited for him outside and finished him off. We had a lot of that. They're very fond of the knife out there. And also, they were fond of drugs. They used to smoke hashish. Have you heard of hashish? I was approached once when I went on leave to Palestine, which is now Israel, and asked if I would take some hashish over the border. But I wasn't daft.
Was it a problem with the smoking?
Yes, yes. If they, I've only ever seen once, and I told this boy as well, told him off. He was working, and yet he'd been taking hashish. His eyes went to pinpoints. You know the pupils? That's how I knew. That's that Abdul, the cook, told me what to look for. I don't know how I got on without Abdul. He was wonderful.
Did it affect their behaviour a lot, other than just...
Yes, it did. They used to be very sleepy and not want to do any work. And they used to go walk about. Just like the Aborigines do in Australia, the Egyptians do here. The Sudanese suddenly decide, they don't tell you, they just vanish. And then they reappear 6 months later and think they can have their job back. Well, they do get it back, but there's a lot of that.
Now, anything else happened while you were out there before you came back?
King Farouk's train, his personal train, knocked over a child, killed it, and he got out and gave £500 to the parents and then got back on the train and continued on his way to Suez. I remember that.
You didn't see that, though?
No, but it happened. It was all the talk of the camp. And there was an American girl, had a baby, to King Farouk. Oh, there was a lot of gossip.
And anything else?
Let me see. Yes, I remember. I'll tell you this. On the 12th of March, 1945, I was stationed at this camp. And
that's before the war, finished the war, then.
Yes, just before. I forgot about this. It was my 21st birthday. And I was going to be very, very... There was one other girl. It was the same as me. She had the same birthday. And they were going to have a big party for us. And this was the hardest thing that's ever happened to me. They came to me and said, I'm sorry, but you're posted tomorrow. I said, tomorrow? It's my 21st birthday. They said, sorry, you better get your bags packed. They're picking you up at 5 o'clock. So I was posted to Port Said. And the Americans had been rescued by the Russians from their German prisoner of war camp. And we were to prepare and look after them. So we had to make sure there were donuts and what do you call them? All the American food, you know, peanut. They have a special kind of eating, Americans. Donuts, and that they love to dunk in their coffee, and those meatballs and hamburgers. Oh, hamburgers. And so off I went to set up this camp. And we got all ready for them. And we were putting comics all around the table. The Americans are mad on comics. And they came and they were all dressed in Russian clothes because they were in rags when the Russians found them. And they had these tall Cossack hats. And the district manager said, I'm sorry, girls, he says, but you'll have to look at their hats. He says, to find out their rank. But I forgot to look, and I'm chatting away to this man, and he's a 3-star general. And he had a big Cossack hat on. And, you know, one of them gave me one for a souvenir, and I don't know what happened to it. Somebody must have stolen it. But I was very, very unhappy that day. No cards. The cards would have to... On my 21st birthday, I'd sort of made a fetish of it. You know, it was going to be a great day. But no, that's what happened to me, looking after the Americans. And it was really interesting, though. hearing about their stories, you know, from prisoners of war. And a very sad thing did happen. One of them went into Port Said with all his money, back pay. That hundreds of money in back pay. And he was stabbed. And I thought, how ironic. He's, what, a couple of days from going home. And he goes out and goes mad. And he's stabbed to death.
Now, when the replacements arrived, the civilian replacements, were you long out there then, or was that pretty well near the end? That'd be late 46.
Few months, yes. Be late 46. That's true. Because I came home in 47.
In January 47?
Yes.
So, what about the last, you know, month or so? Were you sorry to be going, or pleased, or...?
Sad to leave my friends behind. I made friends with the... a Maltese family, and it was very nice to be invited there. She was a fabulous cook, and she used to really make a fuss of us. She even used to have Italian prisoners of war singing and entertaining us when we went there. They were very hospitable, the Maltese people. There were so many people there, born there, Italians, French, every kind, and they'd never seen their own homeland. I was friends with a English couple that had never, the woman had never seen England, and yet she was English. Her little boy could speak seven languages.
And what happened next then?
We handed over the canteens to the civilians, and then we were put on ships. We were...
Which ship? Do you remember?
It was a ship that had been commandeered from the Germans, captured. Because there was German signs all over the ship. But I don't know the name of it. I just remember the Alcantara.
Anything particular about the voyage back, or was it just...
Very rough. Very rough.
And that was January 1947?
Broken furniture and china. You know, very rough. It's the Bay of Biscay, it's always rough.
And that was January 47?
That was... it was December, January. I had two Christmases and two New Years on board ship. Going... and coming back.
And what happened when you got back to England? Were you demobilised straight away?
No, we were sent to back to Dulwich. And as I told you, it was the beginning of the very day it started of the worst winter in living memory. My God, it was cold. Really cold. Your skin crackled with cold. We all sent telegrams off to our families, and then we sort of were signed off, given back money, and we didn't need clothes, though, I don't think. We had our uniforms. We weren't kitted out like the men in the army were.
So when were you demobilised? Was that January?
We had 3 months leave first. It was called Leap, Leave in Advance of Python. I've forgotten what Python was. We were given 3 months leave.
So you were
and 3 months pay.
You demobilised in April. 47.
Yes, yes.
Now, what were you to do? What did you plan to do after that?
Well, they wanted me to go to Rhodesia. By the way, that's 1945.
Who wanted you to go to Rhodesia?
The Navy, Army and Air Force wanted me to go to Rhodesia to do the same kind of work. But I met my husband, and then they wanted me to work here. That's the letter. You see the dates. Well, Ned found that, didn't she?
March. So, but why didn't you want to go? Do you...
I met my husband. I had emptied my kit. I'd been home for 3 months and I'd eventually got to the bottom of my kit bag. And at the bottom of my kit bag was the back of a player's cigarette packet, and on it was written an address. Sergeant Joe. And I thought, Joe? Stevens. I even spelt his name wrong. I didn't know it very well. And he said, write to me when you get home. So I wrote to him and I said I was coming back down. I spent all that winter, London, Northumberland, London, Northumberland. Spent my leave going back and forward. And then I met him and then I got a job and born in Hollingsworth in Oxford Street.
And when did you get married?
3rd of July, 1948.
So that, and you worked in a shop?
Yes, born in Hollingsworth. Very nice shop.
And how do you think your military service had affected you, you know?
Well, everything, as one of the girls said, she said, we've done things, she said, it'll be very boring going back to our life. But it wasn't really boring. It was quite, in fact, it was quite exciting coming home. 2 years away, lots of things had happened. And it was really nice. My sister used to console me, sending me poems. Oh, to be in England now that April's here.
So you were pleased to get back?
Oh, I was very pleased to get back.
And you didn't mind working the shop? It didn't strike as boring after being in Egypt?
No, it was nice. Remember, we hadn't seen lots of things. I don't think you realise what we done without. We were healthy, but we didn't have ice cream. We didn't have white bread. All the bread was greyish brown. When we went on that ship, we had American ice cream. We had white bread. It was wonderful. You don't know how wonderful it was. The food, we thought we were in heaven when we got on board that ship. Absolutely. I ate 3 Christmas dinners because all the girls were seasick, but I wasn't. I couldn't eat more than 3. I had a wonderful time.